Hey, everybody, this is producer Catherine O'Brien, and I just wanted to jump in before we get to the show and share some great news that we just received. FeedSpot, feedspot.com, did a profile on top luxury travel podcasts, and guess who came in at number one? That's right, Solo Travel Talk got number one on their list. We are so thrilled. So thank you big time to FeedSpot, and I'll include a link in our show notes so that you can see this piece for yourself. But also, we just want to say, as always, thank you to you, the great, wonderful listeners of Solo Travel Talk. You really make the show what it is. We love sharing all of Astrid's expertise and her insights into solo travel, but really, it's for you. You make the show what it is. So we are so grateful to our dedicated listeners. You bring back all kinds of great questions and comments for Astrid. We really wanted to share this news with you. So again, thank you to you, our great listeners. Thank you to FeedSpot. I'll include the link in the show notes. And on to the show.
This is Solo Travel Talk, the Japan series. Your solo travel advisor and host is Astrid Clements.
Japan is famously not religious, yet there is a sense of spirituality that permeates throughout. From cultural touchstones to shrines and temples, talismans, even manners and customs all seem to carry a piece of the spiritual life of Japan. Our solo travel advisor Astrid Clements sensed it on her recent trip to Japan, and trust us when we say the spiritual energy had its impact. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Are you intrigued? Do you need some spiritual renewal? Let's hear from Astrid about how spirituality wove its way through her visit to Japan.
Well, I'd first of all like to welcome all of our listeners to today's show and remind them that in all of our Japanese series podcasts, we share a personal travel tip of mine that I think really helps the solo travel experience be more enjoyable and meaningful. This show's how-to travel tip will be, how can you bring the idea of mindful travel to any of your journeys? So stay tuned, because this travel tip, I think, is a solo travel game changer. Okay, Catherine, let's get into the topic of today's show, spiritual renewal in Japan.
Well, and I want to share with our listeners a little bit that when we met up after you got home from Japan, I commented to you about how you looked different. That's absolutely what happened. You seemed different. And that's where we kicked off this idea of a spiritual energy for your Japan trip idea. That's where it all came from. I really want to open up by saying, was this a surprise to you? And tell us from your perspective what was going on.
Okay. Whenever I travel anywhere, I'm always very curious about the country's spiritual focus. Do they have a prominent religion like Catholicism, Buddhism, Hinduism, or are they basically non-believers or atheists? Or is there some kind of blend of religions? Also, I'm very curious about the younger generation. Do they really have spiritual beliefs or any kind of spiritual leanings? Because I'm finding more and more of the younger generation are very non-religious. They're spiritual in certain ways, or they're seeking spiritual truths, but it's not from a formal religious concept, or I guess how I was raised as Catholic. And then also, how does a particular religion influence that country's culture? Because religion or spiritual beliefs really do have a strong influence on cultural aspects that people choose. And, you know, different cultures all over the world is what one of the main things that makes traveling so interesting and so exciting. At least I think so. Mm. And I think most people think that. So from a minimal amount of pre-trip spiritual research that I did about the Japanese religion, spiritual beliefs, I really didn't find that much information that I could relate to. It was really kind of very foreign to me. Some of their Buddhist beliefs I had heard and I've thought about and kind of also do myself, I guess you'd say. But what I found is that the Japanese are not religious. 78% of them, really, they have no religious affiliation or whatever. but 79% do believe or accept Shintoism. So they're not religious, but they believe or they accept some of these spiritual beliefs that are Shinto. Then 67% believe or accept Buddhist teachings. Even though they're not religious, the majority of the people do understand and do accept some Buddhism and Shinto beliefs. Going a little further into this enigma that the Japanese are not religious, most of what I found, the Japanese customs, did originate from these two spiritual or religious beliefs structures, okay? Basically, the Japanese have a sense of spirituality, but they do not follow a certain religion or doctrine. Now, Shintoism really is the basis of Japanese spirituality, and it is a very simple form of nature worship. And really, it was the first spiritual consciousness in Japan. And Shintoism originated in Japan. It is unique to Japan. In this belief system, they believe every living thing, whether it's trees, rocks, flowers, animals, sound, wind, fire, all contain a spirit. And they name this spirit as kami, okay? So when I first came across this spiritual construct, I must say I couldn't relate to it. I was thinking fairies, ghosts, you know, spirit. I like to look at nature and everything, but this is a much more deeper connection and entwinement with nature and basically the rhythm of natural life. So I decided I would leave my ignorance alone until I was in Japan to fully understand why Shintoism is still at the root of so much that is right and wonderful about the country and its culture. And this is what I really did discover. And one thing before I left for my trip, I did decide to do one thing differently than I do in most of my trips, which, you know, when I travel, I just like to do as much as I can, absorb the culture, the food, go to the sites, talk to the people, etc. But I decided that I was on this trip going to have a Zen mindset. And in my consciousness, I decided, well, first of all, I was going to slow down. I was not going to just blow and go, basically, and that I was going to live in the moment, just experience what was in front of me and experience it on the, I guess, the most deep or being able to really absorb everything. And if I couldn't accomplish my daily itinerary, I have decided before I left, I would just let it go. Because sometimes I get real stressed out about, can I do all this? And which is the most important or whatever. But basically, I decided that I was just going to go with the flow when I was in Japan. A relaxed state of mind, kind of a Zen mindset, is what I decided that I would do when I was in Japan. So that's how I approached this spirituality. I knew a little bit about it, the Shintoism and the Buddhism, but I thought as a personal way to be in tune with Japan and traveling to Japan, I would kind of have a different approach to this trip. So this was about as much spiritual prep as I had before I left. But what ended up happening to me as soon as I stepped foot on Japanese soil is I was overwhelmed by the warm, helpful, positive energy of the Japanese people. They were so disciplined, but they were relaxed. But still, they were very, very busy and did a lot of things, but it wasn't this kinetic, kind of frenetic energy about very law and rule abiding. I didn't see any evidence of any kind of crime, petty crime or anything. Very rule abiding, law abiding. No crime, basically. Super safe. I mean, Japan to me is truly one of the safest destinations I've ever been to. Japan was spotlessly clean. Yeah. That is another thing that I found so astounding, because in many of the Asian countries, that is not the case. But Japan, clean. The people focus so much on cleanliness, and everything is clean, their environment, their personal selves, etc. Plus the people, again, they were so refined and they were quiet with wonderful manners. You never heard any shouting, pushing, fighting, cursing, nothing like that. No homelessness or drug problems. Thriving economy. And it blows me away that this small island has been so prosperous since World War II after the devastation. But when you go there and you observe these people and how they live their lives, it does strike you very hard, like, what is their secret? And then another thing is their healthy and tasty food. Mm. And this really does go back to many of their spiritual beliefs, and I'll go into that a little bit. So basically, I was totally blown away. How can an advanced country and culture in today's world be so happy, healthy, rule-abiding, and successful without having a religious base, without being grounded in Catholicism or Hinduism or some basic religious system, let me say that, and be so wonderful? That was something that really hit me hard, and I was fascinated by it. This was a complete shock to me, but it really became one of the focuses of the entire trip. I was really trying to understand their spiritual secret. And really last, Catherine, why you felt I changed. I looked better, more relaxed and vibrant, which is really not usually the case. When I come back from a 3.5-week trip to a country I've never been to that's on the other side of the world, I am wiped out. And it really takes me a week, sometimes 10 days, to kind of get back in the flow, get rested, etc. I think what happened to me when I was in Japan was on a deep level, and it really was, I guess I would say, a deeper enlightenment of my essence. And I didn't expect any of this. This is what was so magical about it. It made me want to just, I don't want to say jump for joy, but I really felt I gained so much from being in Japan. But what I realized is I needed further growth in being more real and more me. I saw, I guess, my flaws, my weaknesses and vulnerabilities in a clearer way. And it made me leave even more of what I consider superfluous facades behind. Mm. And again, I did not expect to be thinking like this or feeling like this. All this enlightenment was so shocking to me, because I've always prided myself in being me. Even as a young child with an unusual name like Astrid, I always stuck out, God. So to blend in really was probably not my destiny so much. So I really kind of accepted, or I had this persona of, is what you see is basically what you get. Mm. But in Japan, I realized I had more learning to do, really, when it came to personal truth and growth. So I guess that's why you thought I looked better. I had to let go of some personal emotional baggage that I really didn't realize I needed to. And, of course, all of that wonderful Japanese food. The people in Japan are so healthy. You don't have drugstores on every corner. People are not going to getting their meds once a month. I mean, they're it's just amazing. They are just super healthy. And I think at the root of it is their spiritual consciousness. So that's really the answer to this question, is that I was shocked by what I was seeing and feeling and how it affected me on a deep spiritual level. So I do think it changed me. It made me better.
I have to say that this is kind of the secret sauce episode for me, because seeing that change in you was what made me think, like, I need to get to Japan. So I'm really excited for us to be talking about this, because I think that what you're sharing is just in the same way that you were surprised, I think our listeners are going to be surprised by that as well.
Yeah, Japan is a place, I mean, granted, there are a lot of interesting things to see. The food is fantastic. So many people go to Japan just to experience Japanese cuisine. Mm-hmm. But Japan, they're really their culture and this spiritual strength that they have and how it's unique to them is something that I think a traveler really will benefit from if they want to, because it's there and it's there to touch you. I really think I need to give our listeners an overview of the two main, you always say religious beliefs, but I'm going to say spiritual beliefs, but Shinto and Buddhism and Japan's kind of Zen Buddhism, so our listener can get a clearer idea of the Japanese beliefs. So let's start with Shintoism. Like I said, it's the root where Japanese spiritual consciousness started. Shinto really had no founder. It has no sacred scripture. And as I shared, it originated in Japan, nowhere else. The ancient Japanese believed the world around them was inherited by gods and spirits that were housed and dwelled in nature. Like I said, the mountains, the trees, the streams, the rocks, the flowers, the wind, fire, all had a spirit. And these spirits were called kami. And they believed kami were cheerful and friendly to humans. So if you kept the kami satisfied and happy, they would watch over you. These were their ancient beliefs. This is how they were experiencing or they interpreted their spiritual side of their essence. On the other hand, they also believed that the kami would unleash wrath and mayhem on humans if they violated the kami's cardinal rule, and that is to be physically and spiritually clean. Physical and spiritual cleanliness is the bottom line consciousness that someone should have, is to be spiritually clean and physically clean. Clean humans meant happy kami, and happy kami meant a peaceful realm. So the root of Japanese cultural virtues of cleanliness and honorable behavior today are rooted in Shintoism and their belief in keeping the kami happy. Now, to think like that, there's a disconnect there. But in Japan, it is solid as a rock. The Japanese reverence for nature is seen throughout the culture, and these spirits that are in nature and all around you, the Japanese protect those and they value that. The Japanese gardens are astounding. And they're all created with that consciousness of great energy, okay? The Ikebana flower arranging, this wonderful art of flower arranging, which is so unique to Japan, is rooted in good kami. The bonsai tree, the hiking through the gorgeous mountains and bathing naked in the natural spring onsens, all this love of nature and being in tune with positive energy from nature is very, very rooted in Shinto beliefs, okay? So nature to them, as we all know, is always changing. And for the Japanese, it's a life-affirming cycle, and it helps them be flexible in their own lives when they change, when change is necessary, basically. So for them to revel in the changing of nature around them on just a cyclical way every year, that helps them to be very flexible in their own lives. They just have more of a sense that if something happens, how am I going to move forward? They don't really have a whole lot of what I call stubbornness or resistance to what is evolving. And this is rooted in this love of nature, this positive energy in nature, in all the commies. Mm-hmm. But they accept change positively. And really, as I said, they take it as a natural cycle of life, which a lot of Westerners or people from other areas of the world, they feel like, oh, well, I am this way. This is the way it should be, etc. And many times things in their life which are considered problems or very big obstacles can be approached in a different mindset that will be beneficial to them. And the Japanese just can do this wonderfully. And here again, I do think it's definitely rooted in the spiritual Shintoism essence. There was a quote that I want to read to you that kind of doesn't sum all of it up, and I apologize. I did not write down who said this, but it's the sacredness of nature and the need to fit into the cogs of society without complaint and deep paradigms that stem from ancient spiritual beliefs. They just believe nature is bigger than us. We need to stay in the flow to keep the whole as well as the individual vibrant and positive. This ancient view of reality, I think, is really still very strong in Japan. The Japanese visit Shinto shrines because they believe that the kami reside in these spiritual places, that this is a place that is sacred and that the energy is really special there. So they do go to these shrines. Like I said, they're not religious, but they go to these shrines. And when they do, they partake in a purity ritual of cleansing their hands and rinsing out their mouths before they approach the shrine. Then they say prayers in front of the shrine. The sacred essence of something and the energy that is created something, the Japanese believe, are housed in these kami. And they also believe that kami and people should not be separate. And here again, this is so foreign to me, but I really did try to, and I'm still trying to understand it and incorporate some of the natural truth of it into my consciousness. But they call it basically the way of gods or kami, and it's the law of natural order. So this is how people should be rooted or how they should live. And if they do, honesty, sincerity, purity becomes their focus. And really, that is a great description of the consciousness of the Japanese people. They're pure, they're sincere, and they're honest. It was so refreshing to be there in a modern world where there wasn't deception, etc. Now, they're very subtle in how they communicate with you and how you interact with the Japanese, and they don't speak any foreign language, really, so it's difficult. But this is their core root of who they are. On the opposite side of that spiritual coin is certain deeds create impurity, and then one needs to cleanse these impurities for their peace of mind and good fortune. So they go to these shrines to cleanse themselves of impurities or wrong deed. So this cleansing of their soul is still a very popular spiritual and cultural practice today. So it's a cultural thing as well as it's a spiritual thing. So just kind of to sum it up, really, Shintoism is a simple belief in the spiritual purity and natural order of life that people should be in harmony with. So I hope I'm not getting too heady for our listeners, but most non-Japanese have no real understanding of Shintoism and its influence on the Japanese culture. And really, to understand the Japanese, you have to know something about the Shinto religion. I share this because if you're going to go to Japan, you really should do some pre-trip research and reading about Shintoism so you can value it, because it goes into the food, how they prepare their food, how they dress, how they interrelate to everybody. It's very subtle, but it is the foundation of the essence of the consciousness to me in Japan. Okay? Now, next, Buddhism. Now, this is the other main belief system that is adhered to in Japan. And it was first introduced in Japan from the Chinese in about the 6th century. So it was kind of a late comer, but they did take to it because it gave them an ethical code to live by. And things were evolving. It wasn't just totally agrarian culture in Japan. So they were becoming more complex in their structure on how they organize themselves and govern themselves and interrelate with different tribes or sects or clans or whatever. So it took root in Japan because it gave them a moral framework of the universe. And it addressed questions like life, death, reincarnation, where Shintoism didn't do any of this. It was really concerned about life and life on a daily basis and how to be in tune and have a good life. But Buddhism was concerned about the soul and the afterlife. So Buddhism really is built around the belief that people can reach a state of enlightenment in which they can obtain love, wisdom, and more clarity in their life. So the Japanese, they took to this. They were ready for it, and it is strong to this day in how people blend, I guess you'd say, their bottom beliefs or their basic beliefs of Shintoism, but also how to be wise, how to really love. Those kinds of things were not present in Shintoism. It wasn't thought about, I guess you would say. But in this Buddhism, they have a set of truths, which they call the Four Noble Truths. First, there is a universal suffering, that there is suffering. So you should just know that suffering is part of life. Number two, suffering does have a cause. Three, suffering has an end. And four, there is a path to end the suffering, okay? And that is through the enlightened path. And I won't go on that. If you're interested, you can Google it. But to be a Buddhist, you need to follow a path that leads a moral life. When you do this, then you develop wisdom and understanding and a mindfulness of one's thoughts and actions. So this was kind of like a more, I guess you would say, complicated concept of spiritual beliefs. But this is what was needed at the time and still is vibrant today, okay? So through meditation, in Buddhism, you can overcome these mindsets. So meditation began to take root in Japan and is still very strong today. So the life cycle of birth, death, and this repetition, you move towards enlightenment as you become more enlightened. Then the Japanese kind of took it to their own version. In Japan, there are four different types of Buddhism, but the one that is most unique to Japan is Zen Buddhism, the one that now is so popular all over that people from all faiths, etc., are getting into because it has so many benefits to practicing some of what is in Zen Buddhism. But Zen Buddhism emphasizes the close connection to nature and the role of the teacher as opposed to deities like the kami, guiding one to spiritual knowing. So Zen teachings value the root of your intuition. So it's not totally opposite to Shintoism, but it's bringing it more into the person, in the person's consciousness and soul. They have a belief of nothing lasts forever, and then nothing really has any substance. There's really, it's just all emptiness.
Impermanence, and, right?
Yes. And that these beliefs are present throughout philosophy, art, and literature in Japan. And this Zen enlightenment basically is achieved from what they call Zazen, or sitting in Zen. And this is a form of meditation where you sit for hours attempting to free your mind from your worldly concerns. Now, like I said, there are a lot of people all over the world that are meditating now and reaping the benefits from it. So this is something that really is started in Japan, the Zen Buddhism, and they do it. I mean, there are a lot of businessmen, et cetera, after work, they go to a temple, and for an hour, they sit in Zen, and they just meditate. This blending of these two spiritual beliefs, that is kind of what Japan is all about. Another thing, the Japanese talk to themselves, or they listen to what's in their mind versus talking to a god. That is one of the key different, I guess, religious or spiritual structures to how they view being in tune with the spiritual aspect of themselves. So what they do, and this is what I found myself doing more and more, is they seek their own truth first, and then they try to live a pure and enlightened life. So that's kind of the blend of those two things. This blend of Shinto and Buddhist beliefs, you don't have to have one faith like the West. Your way or your path really encompasses the inclusion of blending of a lot of belief systems. They even, and I have to mention this, Confucianism is also in their spiritual consciousness. And this influences their culture in terms of family, state, government, in the organizational structure. They're very hierarchical. Mm. Eldest is the most revered, or the boss is, you know, and there's a lot of different cultural mores that they do in order to keep that balance and that reality there. So that's a little bit in there. So that's kind of like the overview of Shintoism and Buddhism and how it blends, how they don't really have or follow a religion, but they have these spiritual beliefs that are the foundation of how they view reality, and it's all through their culture, and how Japan is so wonderful. What I think we ought to do now, Catherine, is I think we should go ahead and do our little mid-show promotion so we can get out of some of this heaviness. Because I don't want this show to be heavy, but I do want to enlighten our listeners about what a wonderful spiritual consciousness that is in Japan. And if you are drawn to this, or thinking in these ways and needing some spiritual reset or growth, Japan is a great place to delve into this.
Sounds good to me, because I think you've primed everybody for this how-to question.
It really has. It was kind of weird when I started writing about it. And I don't really think like this that much, because I've always had very strong spiritual consciousness, and I don't have difficulty doing the right thing. And I really always try to be truthful and honest and live my life in a way that I feel is pleasing to God, myself, and others. I'm hooked up that way. I'm not tempted with all kinds of things. And I've been blessed because of that. But I realized in Japan that I needed to get even deeper. There were some things about me that needed some elevation.
Well, I'm glad that you're sharing this with everybody here. And there are a couple of things coming together here in this mid-show how-to, and that is because this how-to is actually brought to us by the Astrid Travel Club. And so this question fits in perfectly with not only our topic of this episode, but with the Astrid Travel Club, and we'll tell you about that in just a moment. But Astrid, how can we bring the idea of mindful travel to any of our journeys?
Okay, mindfulness really is another one of these current self-help topics that's really being discussed and practiced by more and more people around the world as people seek to have more productive and meaningful lives. You know, a lot of people are achieving success financially and a lot of their goals, but they're feeling empty. They're trying to reassess what they need to do in order to be happy, to just to be satisfied and to appreciate, etc. So this mindfulness and the value of being mindfulness is really being talked about, written about, and people are beginning to approach their lives with more mindfulness. So approaching solo travel with a mindful perspective really is also becoming more desired. I mean, you know, you need to, when you travel, quit staring at your phone, reading emails, texts, staying up with the news, or don't even worry about getting lost or missing a flight. Basically, you need to remove intentionally anything that would distract enjoyment when you travel is the opposite of mindfulness. Okay, so I'm going to do a little bit more explanation so we'll get focused on this. And I'm going to share with you a quote by Diana Winston, who is the director of the UCLA's Mindful Awareness Research Center. Now, you can see how important that this mindful, when UCLA has a whole mindfulness research center. But she writes, mindfulness is paying attention to our present moment experiences with openness, curiosity, and willingness to be with what is. That sounds so simple and doesn't sound like it would be that big of a deal, but let me tell you, lots of people are way off missing this mark and they don't even realize it. They think they're curious or whatever, but deep inside, the filters are there. So let's take it a little bit further. A mindful traveler is receptive, curious, someone who's respectful of the culture, who's not trying to impose their own culture, and who's willing to view the experiences through a beginner's eyes rather than coming into it with expectations. Here again, this is a lot harder to do than you think, because you've been conditioned for 30, 40, 50 years about what you think is good and not, and what's cool and what's off-putting and this kind of thing. So, you know, this being a mindful traveler with basically the eyes of a child that is open to what is there and to see it in a way that is what it really is not easy for anyone. It doesn't matter if you're from Vietnam, Russia, the United States, Brazil, you all have these biases and these filters that are natural. But to be a mindful traveler, you need to try to let a lot of that, put it on the shelf, basically, and try to go into a place with a real, I guess, childlike wonder. So that's really the basic concept of mindfulness and how it relates to travel. So what I'm going to do now is give you a couple of tips for mindful travel. And not a lot of them, but it just kind of helps you get into the focus a little bit more. And as you do this more, you will become more aware of when you're not mindful. And that is a big step forward, okay? But the first tip is to use your senses. Don't just focus about what you're thinking. Focus on what you're experiencing in your five senses with your eyes, like the sunsets. Everybody takes all these photos of sunsets, but that is a little bit, not only is it because of the rage of the iPhone camera and getting wonderful shots and posting them on Instagram, but people really are paying attention to sunsets and rainbows and cloud formations more than they ever have. And it's affecting them on a deeper level. But try to absorb the glorious sceneries that you're seeing, not just looking at them and saying, oh, there's Mount Fuji. Mount Fuji personally gave me chill bumps. And then I really knew, well, maybe I am getting on a deeper level. I'm not just looking at Mount Fuji and say, oh, I got that photo. I was really just mesmerized, to tell you the truth. That's a little bit of what I'm trying to share with you about being mindful. So try to appreciate the different types of nature that's different from what you're accustomed to. I live in Louisiana, and we have lush, green nature, and it's just a natural paradise down here. But it's a certain look. It's totally different than the savanna of Africa and the snow tundras and everything. But all of that has a different effect on you as a person. So the five senses, first of all, the eyes, then the tastes and the smells. Oh, my God. Now, I can really smell. So that's something that can be good or bad, but you have to absorb that because it does affect you. It hits you a certain way. Yeah. Like I know when I was in China, some of the incense that they would burn at those temples really kind of almost gave me a stomachache. And I was trying to think, why am I reacting to it like this when everybody else, it gets them much more calmer, and it's a thing that they do to purify. And so all I could think of is maybe I'm just not there yet. But be aware of the smells and then the taste. Oh, my God, Japan. Whatever you taste is going to be wonderful. But all of that affects your mindfulness and how you're experiencing your travel experiences. And then listen to the people speaking. Look at how they're dressing. Interact with others. Watch the flow of life. Be a people watcher. And most people who travel solo are people watchers. I have made that conclusion because they don't go just to do it. They like to watch people. They like to see all these differences and the nuances and the culture. But the thing about being mindful is to use your senses, not just your thinking, okay? Then the next tip is just to slow down. And this goes into this Zen travel mindset that I told myself that I was going to have. But it does change the essence of any solo trip. If you're not rushing to one place or this place, and you have all these things, this to-do list that you want to do, it changes the rhythm and really just the whole energy that's in you and how you're experiencing everything. So decide to slow down, okay? Savor your meals. In Japan, if you're not accustomed to eating with chopsticks, you're going to slow down because, and they don't give you forks in most places. It's going to take you a while to eat. And it takes even the Japanese time to eat. They don't just wolf things down. But that is very good. That is very good for you health-wise. There's something that happens also in your consciousness when you eat slowly, but savor your meals, okay? And then do what I say is aimless wandering. And Venice is a good example of that. Just get lost in the streets. You're going to find your way back to one of the main streets because that's Venice for you, okay? You get lost, you get turned around, but then you always hit a few of the main streets and you're good. But do some of this aimless wandering, window shop, go into an art gallery, talk to the director, or just get in a flow where you're really not trying to do anything per se. That will help you have a much more quality kind of consciousness when you're in a place. So slow down and just kind of absorb more than say, okay, well, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. Just readjust it a little bit and slow down. The next is, I probably should have started this one in this modern world, is just put down your phone, turn it on silent. And if you can help yourself, don't check your emails or what's going on at home. Do it one time a day, whether it's in the morning before you leave or at nighttime. Try not to do it when you're eating, but just put the phone down. It's really not going to change anything, to tell you the truth. And I just suggest to try to detox from the phone, basically, because that'll help you stay in the present. That'll help you stay where you are, basically. The next tip is to keep a journal. I'm a big fan of journaling. And talking about the Astra Travel Club, one of the things that we do, and one of the benefits of joining the club, is you get a journal as a gift. But in this journal, we have 10 questions that help you think about your trip before, during, and after, that kind of focuses you, makes you more mindful before you leave, et cetera, and when you're there. And then in the end, our desired result is that you have much more meaningful travel. So a journal is a great way to do it, to write down your thoughts, what you experienced the day, whether it was good or bad, you know, whatever you're thinking about, it doesn't matter whether your feet hurt or anything, write it all down. It is all helps you be in the moment, mindful, and it's a recordation of what you experienced there. And not only will you enjoy it, but maybe some others will enjoy it. And it will help you become a traveler who really does experience wherever they go on the deepest level that you can do it. So to write it down is an exercise that I think is wonderful, and I'm a big believer in it. The next tip is really so simple. Just stop, pause during the day, and remind yourself to be mindful. Am I being mindful? You know, am I just, you know, surface or whatever? What is, you know, what am I smelling? Or just, you know, just keep thinking about mindfulness. Pause, because you will get more in tune that way. It's funny. If you think about something, it'll help you continue to be in that basic consciousness. So just stop and don't think about what's going on at home or work. Bring your mind back to basically to observing and experiencing through your senses. So stay in the present. And let me tell you, it's much more difficult than it sounds. You know, I can sit here and give you these tips and you can, but you're going to, it's a challenge. So the last tip is practice some mindfulness at home before you leave on your trip. Do some meditation. Here we go again into the Zen. But do a little meditation. Sit for 5 minutes and try not to think about anything. You don't have to be on your knees or anything, but just however comfortable you want to be. And then maybe try to elongate the times that you just sit and just try to not think about anything. It's a challenge. I mean, it is a real challenge, especially if you're used to being the boss, creating to-do lists. Let me tell you, it is not easy. And then if you're having trouble, I mean, you know, there's so many videos now about how to be mindful and how to meditate and apps. Mm-hmm. I mean, get into that if you feel like you need to. But again, with one of the best byproducts of mindful travel is it helps you feel more relaxed and less stress when you're traveling, because traveling is stressful, you know, especially solo travelers. So you have to work at not being anxious or a little out of sorts or stressed out. So by being mindful, it helps you to be less reactive to things you don't like. Or when things go wrong, you can be more pliable and basically you can roll with the punches and keep your head so you can solve the problem. And that is important because a lot of times people go, and they just have a panic attack or whatever. By always accepting what is and being in the moment and mindful of it, as you can say, what will be, you'll be able to cope better with what's going on, and probably you could end up learning from the situation. And that, I promise you, that always happens. It's like you allow the fate or higher power or the kami or whatever to step in to create, to solve it and make something good out of something that was bad or was negative to you or was bothering you. I'll finish with this tip or this information. Mindful travel is really catching on too. I mean, they even have all these mindful retreats now that you can go to. They are strictly geared to helping you decompress and to teach you how to cultivate a deeper awareness in your lives. Think mindfulness on your next solo adventure and experience what I say, the experience of nowness.
This how-to tip has been brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club. And like we said, it's perfect that this is being sponsored by the Astrid Travel Club because mindfulness really is part of the reason that the Astrid Travel Club exists. And as Astrid mentioned, the journaling, the beautiful Astrid Travel Club journal. There's a tab on Astrid's website. If you go to astridtravel.com and look right there on the top of the homepage, you'll see a tab that says Astrid Travel Club. Click that. We'd love for you to explore and see if the Astrid Travel Club is right for you. There's some trips coming up that are very exciting. And of course, we did have a whole show dedicated to the Astrid Travel Club. So if that's right for you, we invite you to click on that, find out more information. And thank you for sponsoring this how-to mindfulness tip. Well, let's turn a little bit our conversation to somebody going to Japan. And what can the traveler expect from the spiritual side of Japan? Like, what will they see and what can they experience when they're there?
Okay, Catherine, first of all, Japan has thousands of temples and shrines throughout the country. There are over 2,000 shrines just in Kyoto.
Wow.
So what the traveler will experience, for starters, is they will visit a variety of these shrines and temples. And really, to understand what you are seeing and experiencing, I recommend all travelers to Japan to do some pre-trip reading about specific religious places they'll be visiting to. Otherwise, I can promise you, you'll have a shallow experience and you'll end up at the end of your trip being templed and shrined out. Really, you'll just say, oh, not another one of these.
I've never said the phrase, I'm shrined out.
But it's true. And let me tell you, I did see people kind of saying, like, if I have to go to one more. But it was because they were not in tune with what was going on in the space. And they were looking at it and experiencing it through tourist's eyes. Mm. I really encourage you, because you're going to be visiting a lot of them, and it's terrible if you get an overload of it, because you're missing the whole reason to go there.
Well, this is like what you've been saying the whole show, is there's a mindset here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There are a few basic things you need to know when you're visiting these temples and shrines. First of all, what's the difference between the two? Because a lot of people, if they don't really know any background, they go, okay, this is a temple, that's a shrine. It just all kinds of gets blurred. Yeah. And then there's specific etiquette in order to experience a temple or a shrine. And you should know these things. First of all shrines, you enter through what's known as a torii gate. And those are those big orange, kind of crimson red gates. Some of them have black on them. Some of them don't. Some of them are not even painted. But you bow and you go in through the gate. And once you enter, go on the other side of the gate and enter the space where the shrines are located. That's considered sacred ground. And most of them have paths through beautiful gardens or forest or whatever, and you walk along these paths, and you really shouldn't walk in the middle. You should walk on one side or the other, and the Japanese are lefties, basically. They walk on the left. So you should kind of traverse up on the left-hand side, and you will see most people doing it. The people who are going in the middle, they don't know. They don't know. And the middle is really the most sacred. So you want to be respectful and go on one side or the other. Then, as I said, the kami or the gods reside on these sacred grounds. So you want to partake in the purification ritual when you're in this area. And they have these little wells, basically, that are water fountains, and it has running water, and you take a little bamboo ladle and you wash both of your hands. Then you put a little bit of the water in your left hand. You put it in your mouth. You rinse it out, and everybody spits it out. That's the way you do it. But you purify your hands and your body and your words and everything mm-hmm. by this ritual. Everybody does it. Now, if you're a tourist and say you believe in another religion, you don't want to do it, it's okay. But if you're really going to be in tune, you should do it. I don't think there's anything that, to me personally, is something that is off-putting in any other religion. Maybe there is, and maybe you're uncomfortable with it, and if you are, don't do it. But this is part of experiencing Japanese spirituality. You really shouldn't judge. It's best just to do, because you don't know really if it is part of how you get on a deeper spiritual level. I did it every time. I must say, Japan changed me going there, or it made me a better person. And maybe part of it was that I was really trying to be in the flow and practice all of the things that they do as part of reverence and being in the correct state. And number one is cleanliness. The Japanese are the cleanest people in the world. Okay, then they have a specific prayer ritual. And I won't go into all of this because I've talked about it in some of my own podcasts, but you approach the shrine, you do clapping and bowing, you also throw coins in as offerings, and there's a certain way that you do it, and you petition the kami, the gods, with your prayer, and then you leave. Now, it's different in the Japanese Buddhist temples, and these are grand. Many of them are so... they are just absolutely gorgeous structures. And whenever I would go into these temple grounds, in the temples, you'll know you're in a temple when you enter in a gate, like a closed gate, not just the torii open gate, okay? Mm-hmm. It is a closed gate that is locked in the night, etc. So, but I would go into these grounds and I'd think, oh, this is the power. This is... powerful Japan. I mean, these temples are just so heavy and beautiful. They're like subtle, but being strong. And when you approach them, you'll see incense burners. And a lot of people or Buddhists who practice, they will burn the incense. And one of the things that they do when they burn the incense is they get the smoke on them. And this smoke helps to get them purified, etc., and to get them ready to approach Buddha with their prayer. But when you go in the temple, you have to take your shoes off. Lots of them are just kind of sparse. Some of them have other things in them, but you approach Buddha. Of course, you bow and you say your prayer. That's kind of like the two differences between the Shinto. And the Shinto shrines are much more basic and open, and they're scattered throughout. But the temples are usually much more grand, etc. Okay, so you'll get the difference once you're there for a couple of days, okay? But then after you go and you say your prayers at either the shrine or the temples, they also have things that you can purchase. And I know this sounds kind of, well, maybe it's just touristy, but it's not touristy. All the Japanese do this. One of the things you can buy is what's called an emma. And an emma is a wooden plaque, and it can be all different kinds of designs. One was a fox, and then another one was a fan, and there are different designs to them. But what you do is you write your wish on them, and then you hang them. There's a special place where you can hang them all, and basically you hang them so they'll be received by the gods, and you just leave it. The next thing that you can buy, and a lot of people like this, Japanese and non-tourists, and I bought quite a few of them, and I gave them away as presents too, because I just love Japan so much. And one of the things, the Japanese, they always pray for good fortune, good health, and happiness. Those are the three basic prayers that they always pray. And they pray for themselves, for their families, and for basically others. The Japanese really are so simple, but so refined and sophisticated. And I think it lies in just that basic good fortune, good health, and happiness. I mean, what else do you want? But you can buy these little amulets that you can carry with you. And they're usually beautifully done in beautiful fabrics, etc. And you can hang them on your purse or just carry them with you. So that's, you can buy those. Also, they have what's called fortune sticks. And this is, oh, the Japanese love this. And I guess this comes maybe from China, or it's very Eastern to me. But you pick out a stick, shake it in this canister, and then you pick out a stick, and the stick leads you to a little piece of paper with your fortune on it. And if it's a good fortune, you keep it with you. But if it's a bad fortune, you go tie it on this rope, and you leave it there. If it's bad, it stays there, and the commies will take care of it, or whatever. But you will leave that behind and move forward, okay? So those are the things that you will see or you'll experience afterwards. And whether you want to do it or not, it's really a personal decision, but I did it all. Like I said, most major shrines and temples have that, but most of them also have the beautiful gardens.
Yeah.
Or they have beautiful park-like settings. You have the opportunity to really get in tune with nature, to sit, to meditate, to pray, because as I've said over and over in this podcast, nature is divine to the Japanese. And you'll feel it in there. You cannot not feel it. And it's beautiful. We're so used to in the West going into gorgeous churches and cathedrals and feeling the sense of spiritual elevation in there in a lot of different things that people feel, whether it's sadness or burden or love or whatever you experience when you go into different church buildings. But to be outside in basically a sacred space is also fabulous. And this is Japan. This is what you will experience when you go to these shrines and these temples. So don't not do that. You're going to miss half of what you should be experiencing. So now I'm going to share some of what I consider some tips on how to experience the Japanese culture from a spiritual perspective, because that's really a lot of what all of this is leading to and what you're going to experience when you go to Japan, if you're conscious of all of this. First of all, number one is really try to connect with nature, because this is the life force. And to respect nature in all of its forms is just what's at the essence of Japan and the Japanese consciousness. They love the changing of the seasons, the cherry blossoms that are only in bloom for 3 weeks. This is one of the happiest times in the Japanese calendar. And the changing of the leaves in autumn, they love that. So they're very aware of all of these things. So when you go there to really experience the spiritual side of Japan and how it relates to the culture, number one, try to really get in tune with nature. So keep telling yourself that, so it will help you. Another thing that they do is they do what's called forest bathing. And this is the Japanese going to the forest, because they feel like there's so much innate peace and tranquility there. So they just love to go into the forest. So if you have an opportunity to hike, or like in Kyoto, there's the bamboo forest. It is amazing. Now, unfortunately, there's so many tourists there now, but if you can go when it's not touristy and go in there, this is something else. But the Japanese love forests. And they do what this is called forest bathing. And they meditate. And I thought that was really interesting, because I know as a child, I used to love to go in the woods. I just loved the feeling of the woods. And I personally liked burning leaves in the fall and the smell of that and everything. But there's something, too, about being in the woods. And the Japanese, they love it. So try some forest bathing. Okay, the next thing is you need to understand as much as you can and accept the Shinto and Buddhist practices of the Japanese. Just go with a very open mindset to try to see how that interrelates and everything. And you don't have to believe in it. I think if you open yourself to it, you're going to learn something from it. And it'll probably, as what happened to me, is enhance your life. And do this more than just visiting the temples and the shrines, like the Zen gardens, the rock gardens. They're a big challenge to me. I mean, all rocks, pebbles, boulders. I mean, I'm from Louisiana. It's really hard, but they're designed to aid you in meditation and to help you get deeper into the meaning of life. So just do it and just keep doing it. And maybe you'll have a breakthrough. But I'm sharing this with you because this is part of their Shinto and Buddhist beliefs and how they experience it and what's in their culture. Mm-hmm. So these unique gardens are there, and they're there with a spiritual purpose. They're not just beautiful, okay? Then also they have, if you like to do pilgrimages, they have what's called a Shikoku pilgrimage. It's a 1,200 kilometer long path that has 88 temples. And this is in the Koyasan mountain area. And this mountain is considered very sacred. And really this route, you start at the mountain and then you end at the mountain. But it's a real big deal. And they have tours that do this. They have all kinds of stuff. So you can do it on your own. You can only go halfway. Mm. You can take an organized tour. And of course, you'd be going through forest and this kind of thing. But if you really want to really get into it and try to have a deeper understanding of all of these concepts I'm talking about, do the Shikoku pilgrimage. It might be something that you're looking for. Yeah. Then another thing that is part of their belief systems that also is a cultural experience is to reflect in an onsen. Now, an onsen is basically a pool of natural water. And originally, most of these onsens were all in the mountainous areas, but now they have them in hotels and everything. And what it is, it's naked bathing with strangers. I mean, it's nothing weird, but they all do it, and they do it like all the time. And like I said, they're in hotels. And people at night before they go to bed, they go and they do an onsen. And basically, if you do it in a hotel, you go and you have to shower and get all clean. Then you go into the onsen. Some of them are even outside on the rooftop so you can commune with the stars. I mean, I did it every time. Mm. And it has a subtle positive effect on you. It really does. I know this sounds weird, and nobody's looking at anybody. Just to be in this pool with these people, and you're all naked, and nobody's talking, and just being. It's something, but they do it. And it's basically, they call it naked communion, but co-bathing physically and spiritually with others. Maybe a lot of you listening, you aren't drawn to it, but this is a cultural practice that is rooted in spirituality. And it's part of this whole cleansing, being cleansed. And this water helps you to cleanse your thoughts. And being in communion with others who are doing the same thing, it's more powerful, they believe. This is another thing that you can experience that is spiritual, but it's also a cultural thing. The next thing is feed your soul with all this wonderful traditional Japanese food. And the Japanese believe food is directly or deeply connected to the soul and its health. So good food restores the spirit. And that's what you think about. And that's the concept of Japanese cuisine. They have a basic dish or meal that they eat all the time. And it consists of something of the sea, like the fish, and rice. That's why sushi is the ultimate on that. But fish, rice, miso soup, and seasoned pickled vegetables because I believe in seasonal, changing something to be in line with the season. But this basic meal is really a spiritual construct. Enjoy it. Do it. Savor it. Go slow with the chopsticks. You won't be able to go fast. Unless you're really good. And that's hard, I think, for Westerners. But relish in the traditional Japanese food. Then do a tea ceremony or two. Mm. It's very different. It's very different. You really, in my opinion, have to be as relaxed and kind of zenned out with nothing in your mind to really get into the flow of the tea ceremony. But it is so basic to Japanese life. They do it. It's reverent. The matcha tea is so healthy for you. If you could live on half of your diet matcha tea, you might live to be 200. So really get into the wonderful Japanese food because it has a spiritual basis to it. This aspect of their culture, I think, is one of the most wonderful things that you have the good fortune to be able to eat throughout your trip. So, and then the last thing is the Japanese aesthetics, and it does have a strong spiritual kind of basis in it. Some of the concept of their aesthetics, and they're very different from Western aesthetics, and I found them different from even the other Asian aesthetics, but it's a concept of Gaido. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It applies to all Japanese arts discipline, but it's the focus on the appreciation of the process of creation, whether it's in the tea ceremony or calligraphy, flower arranging, the ikebana, the no theater. But Japanese aesthetics really are the spiritual manifestation of service, presentation, and creation. So it got a real deep essence to it. It's probably related to how to get into the positive communion with the kami. But this creative process is a manifestation of their spiritual forces that grow through it. So it's in their aesthetics all the way. So look at it because the Japanese aesthetics are really simple, but there's a lot more in it that leaves you to experience rather than shouting at you or so much of something. It's very subtle, but all of this is intertwined with a spiritual basis. I'm going to read you another quote to kind of help sum some of this up because it has been difficult for me to put this together where I felt like it would be easy to listen to. You could absorb it without getting really like it. This is school or whatever. But I felt like I needed to give some presentation as well as my own experiences and then bottom line it and lighten it up a little bit. But this quote says, "In a culture which accepts imperfection and impertinence as beautiful in their own right, as well as recognizing the unseen beauty of everyday life, you can perhaps reach a different state of mind about the things that do and do not matter." And that says a whole lot. So really, get back to basics, live a simple and vibrant life. That's kind of how I interpret that. That really is the answer to that question that we segued out of and how I think that some of the things you'll experience when you go to Japan spiritually, when you visit the temples and the shrines, and then how this spiritual basis flows through many things that you'll do and that you'll experience that aren't part of a shrine or a temple.
Do you know who said that quote or where that quote came
from? No, you know, I'm so sorry. That's right. Sometimes when I'm researching things and I just see something and I write it down and then the phone rings or something. So it's not a slight on purpose.
Maybe I'll look up for it and I'll include it in the show notes if I can find it.
Yeah, because it does sum up.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I like that a lot. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
I know we're closing out here, Astrid, but I do kind of want to know because the origin of this whole topic was me looking at you and seeing how you had a really like a physical change and I could see something different in you. I'm curious and wondering if you could share that with the listeners. What do you think is going to be the lasting impact of this travel and this sense of spiritual renewal you came home with?
Okay, well, I'm going to make this answer short and sweet because it's really, I've kind of talked about it through the show, but the spiritual growth I experienced in Japan really was totally unexpected. But it came to me at really the right time in my life. When something just comes to you when you don't expect it and you go through it and then you know, man, thank you. It is coming from whatever you believe your higher power is or whatever your spiritual groundings are. But this is what happened to me because I really needed a reset and a catalyst to get more real, more truthful about who I am, what I'm doing, to find real happiness. And I'm just a naturally happy person. And I, like I shared, I've always tried to just be who I was because I couldn't fake it. And you just either like me or you, and I, but I really, when I went to Japan, I could see some defenses in myself, some things that I really just ignored, didn't delve into. But some of the basic things are that I thought about and that really I needed to think about is embracing change more.
Mm.
When there's changes and big changes, embrace it. Don't look back. Just embrace it. Very hard to do, but just keep doing it and doing it on a daily level, sometimes even on an hourly level, okay? Then continue to seek your own truth first. Listen to your inner voice more. I mean, we hear that all the time from time to time. And gosh, so many times when you don't, you go, God, I should have done that. But being in Japan, that just kept coming to me more and more. And I don't know if it was all the shrines and temples that I went to or how the Japanese culture just really hit me hard in a wonderful way, and just how much I respected these people and what just made them so classy and simple and just really, I thought, refined. So seek your own truth first. That was another one. Then bathe in nature. I mean, I was really trying to get into that because I'm naturally not that much. I tend to hear birds sing because I have a good ear. And music was my first major. So I hear things, okay? That's easy for me. But the other things, I really thought about nature and bathing in nature and continuing to do that when I got home and on my other travels. Then strive for simplicity. Oh, the Japanese are the best on it. They're the total best with simplicity. But that is so, to me, freeing and empowering. In the West, our lives are way too cluttered. Some of it we make on ourselves, some of it it's difficult not to have them cluttered, but strive for simplicity. It is a life-giving force that I think is one of the reasons, too, why they live so long and they're happy. Then be mindful. We've talked about this kind of in the text as well as in my tip. But this mindfulness thing, that hit me hard too there. Being really mindful, not just kind of mindful. And then the last, daily quiet time. Don't rob yourself of that. Whether you totally meditate or you just sit quietly, you can't hear that inner voice if you don't give yourself the opportunity many times to do it. You can say your prayers at night. You can be by yourself, but I mean to really be totally quiet, you need to do that. And these are the things that I came back with, okay? So these actions or habits are all the things, and really I've done them in the past, but I allowed myself to not stay with them. And the spiritual experience of Japan helped me to get back in tune with these practices, to really get back to the basics. So I can continue to thrive in my life as it changes, as I go into the next stages of my life. So for everyone traveling to Japan or contemplating a trip there, Japan is like no other country I have ever visited. And I think most people will agree who travel there. It was a travel experience that really evolved into a personal spiritual evolution journey. And if you allow yourself to have that perspective, you might experience what I did. And I'll end with just saying, be prepared to be enlightened, because that's what happened to me. With that, I'll say sayonara. Please give us a like, a share, and most importantly, subscribe. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we hope that you are enjoying this encouragement to enlightenment. I mean, Astrid, you're raising the bar pretty high here.
Well, this was a hard one for me to write. Like I said, I didn't want to sound like a teacher, and I didn't want to make it too dry, and I didn't want to make it all about me and everything. But I must say, it was one of the best trips I've ever taken in my 45 years of solo travel. And I did not expect any of it. I really didn't. I thought the food was going to be great. I thought it was going to be kind of like China and Vietnam and some of the other Eastern cultures. It was so completely different in most every way, but then still Asian. And that it related so much to what I needed to experience.
Right then, yeah. Well, of course, listeners, if we would love to hear from you, and maybe some of the listeners, Astrid, can tell you if they found it to be enriching and to be interesting, and not you that you stayed clear of the teacher role, that would be great. And don't forget, of course, listeners, that you can go to astridtravel.com and find out about the Astrid Travel Club. It's right there. There's a tab right on the homepage, so you can find out everything you need to know about the Astrid Travel Club. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. We love Spotify. You can also go to solotraveltalk.com and find the podcast. You can find it at astridtravel.com/podcast. We try to be everywhere, and we love to see you in all of those places. Thank you for listening, everybody. We look forward to bringing you the next episode in the Japan series. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Find Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All things Astrid, including the Astrid Travel Club and this podcast, are available at astridtravel.com. Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk.